Hello, big boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm Anastasia, and I am bringing to your attention AI Snacks with Romy and Robby, a program for AI muggles, not wizards. Together with my guest, we translate AI and robotic technologies from difficult to easy to understand. And today, we are discussing the democratization of AI implementation in companies across industries and business functions. And I'm very pleased to welcome my guest, Christian Nabert, who implemented AI solutions across multiple companies and industrial sectors. And before we talk about democratization of AI in economy, and what does it mean to deliver on the prototype? And what does it mean to go from the prototype to the real solution? I would like to ask Christian a very simple question. How did you end up in the AI industry? And welcome to the show.
Yeah, Anastasia, thank you, of course, for having me in your podcast. Actually, I think I made a very typical way. So I'm in AI and the related fields, data science, machine learning for over 10 years now. But I actually started in research. I did my PhD now about 8 years ago in the field of space and astrophysics. And then I entered industry, right? And I started as a data scientist. Typically, about 10 years ago, I think the New York Times announced data scientists as the sexiest job of the 21st century. And there was a hype, right? There was a hype. Everybody wants to join the data science community. So did I. And I was in automotive industry then, and I tried out data science and machine learning methods and implemented them in projects, and we were very successful in that. And then I got promoted, becoming more and more a technical expert. And after some years, I switched into the management. And currently, I'm working for IV right now, and this and is an automotive engineering company. We serve all big brands in the world, but mainly those in Germany, with engineering competencies, developing powertrain functions, driving functions, and so on. And I'm in charge of the tech hub. This is the department where we centralized, try to bring AI into our project services, products, and so on.
Oh. And Christian, you know, I just would like to pause here a little bit because so you are a real data scientist, and there are so many terms floating around like data engineer, statistician, data scientist, an AI person. So what are the meanings of those terms, and are there differences between, let's say, a data scientist and a data engineers? What are those jobs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we started in the field like with data science, and it has mainly a focus on looking into the data, figuring something out. This is heavily based on statistics. And of course, we soon realized, typically from computer science, you need heavy machinery, you need algorithms to investigate these huge amounts of data lying around. Now, then the data engineer comes into the game. He needs somehow to transfer the data to the data scientist.
Yeah,
and at some point, the machine learning algorithms, so the magic ingredients, I would say, behind the analytics of data nowadays becomes more and more important. And out of the data science community, the machine learning experts developed and become a role on their own, so to say. And of course, the machine learning algorithms are the backbone of also the nowadays AI hype. So yeah. The large language models and the transformer technology in particular is based on machine learning algorithms. So this is the next step of evolution, so to say.
Yeah. And when I ask you, so from where you just started working, practically working in AI after your research and development roles to today, what changed in the industry which might have facilitated the implementation of AI in companies?
Yeah, I would say like 10 years ago, it was much more hands-on and developing the foundations. So you need at a company computer scientists, experts in the algorithms to develop AI. Now, this is only a small part what we see when we look at AI methods nowadays. Some companies even don't have any experts in implementing AI, because right now you have tools like ChatGPT or Adobe Firefly. You can use AI right away. You don't need a computer expert, IT expert to deploy these algorithms. And so it's spread, I would say, a lot more, but you need competencies, of course, along your entire value chain. You need the manager to have AI competencies, but you need also each and every employee to have AI competencies.
So you are talking actually about, a wide adoption of AI knowledge across the ranks at the company. And what do you find in companies you are currently working with? And the situation might have changed in the course of the last 5 years. So could you describe what is going on there?
Yeah, I think this depends very much on the company and the size of the company. So typically when you work with startups in the realm of AI together, they are, of course, the early adopters. They adopt technology as fast as it's possible. When you work with larger companies, it becomes more and more difficult. And so when you think about AI, in my opinion, there are at least two very, very important aspects. One is technology. Of course, you have to implement the technology somehow in your company. You need to make it accessible. The other aspect is a cultural aspect. And I think this is even the most important one. Because if you want to use AI in a big company, the people need to be willing to adopt the technology. They need to be open-minded and know how to deal with the technology. I always use it. I mean, it's a human thing, right? If you want to go out for dinner, for example, and you have two options, you can choose a restaurant you know best, where the food is delicious, you will have a nice evening, or you can choose the newly opened restaurant around the corner and experience something new. And we humans are sometimes in one or the other state. But when you want to implement a new technology, you need the explorative state, and the employees need to be in this explorative state.
And obviously, culture is one of the, let's say, pusher or impediments on the way of automation and AI in businesses. But if you think about further barriers or triggers for AI in businesses, what are those? And I understand that impediments and triggers are very different things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot which also needs to consider. Of course, there are legal aspects which need to be considered. We have in the European Union, we have our AI Act, but there are a bunch of other laws and rules and regulations you need to consider. Of course, you have to take a look on the financial side. This is also one thing which is very important, because sometimes you need to have a heavy invest to implement all the algorithms or to set up the cultural programs. And of course, there are a lot of these technical issues. For example, you need somehow to integrate the technology in your tools and services, in your processes, in your company. And that's also something you need to consider.
And when I look into Germany, where you reside, so the country used to be the engine of Europe economically. But somehow, in my observation, they're moving into crisis quite fast, because they lack adoption of technology tools, which are so common and widespread these days. So how do you assess this geographical place, Germany, on the AI net? Map now?
Oh, that's a good and very difficult to answer question, because it has so many aspects. So one thing I think from the data science hype 10 years ago, what I observed is that because of this hype, a lot of universities in Germany established data science courses, and nowadays we see that there are some well-educated people on the market. So that's from the positive side speaking. We see also companies which are really crucial for building AI. I mean, AI has a really long value chain. You have companies like NVIDIA.
Yeah.
But also these companies rely on probably, you know, TSMC or ASML, but also companies like Zeiss, who build crucial parts for developing the hardware, which is a famous company in Germany. So on the other hand, you have the companies who build applications on top of AI. And you will find a vivid startup landscape also in Germany, especially around Berlin. You will find a lot of capable startups who also deal and build AI technology, so to say.
And you are on the jury of the German AI Award. How can you kind of, you know, pass the review of the past maybe 2 years? What excited you most, and how can you rate this competition across other competitions in Germany?
Yeah, I think, first of all, this was very interesting also to see all the startups and companies applied for this award. And there were a lot of really interesting ideas. And there were also companies that were a lot more sophisticated than just ideas. And that's what I find really impressive, that a lot of companies started like 5 or 6 years ago, now gained a lot of maturity and built products which has underlying patents and all the stuff you need. So there's a long way to build a successful company, and some of them started early and are now at the point where they released very helpful products for the market.
Let's move into implementation of AI and becoming very practical about describing how businesses adopt AI services. So could you please describe the typical project? What are the phases, and what might be maybe best practices and most common bottlenecks across those phases? How do you start at all with AI?
I would say it should at least start with a good plan. So you need a strategy in your company. Of course, that's sometimes missing. I know that because, as I've stated, there are a lot of talents right now leaving universities for hands-on on data science and AI experts. But when it comes to the management, sometimes we have a lack of competencies, of AI competencies. Yeah. But it's crucial to build a good strategy. So that's the starting point. And then, of course, you start typically with, you need to analyze what are you doing in your company? Where can AI give a benefit? Maybe you need to build prototypes. Maybe you can just buy something which is available on the market. So the typical make or buy decision is something you will tackle first.
And where is this competence reside? Is it with the general management? Is it with, I don't know, experts in data, or is it with procurement? So how do you usually observe this?
You need competencies on all levels. Of course, the highest management doesn't need to know a lot of details about AI, but they need to be engaged as well. It is not sufficient if your employees are willing to do AI, but the management is not. You need both on the same side, of course.
And this risk-taking attitude, how difficult is this for contemporary companies in the current business environment?
So that depends, of course. There are different risks along the way. The biggest risk, in my opinion, is to do nothing and to ignore AI, right? This is, I think, the biggest mistake you can make. And even that is also something we need to say, cannot said be enough that, of course, the management needs to be encouraged and engaged, and all employees. But even if you don't have the competencies to build a strategy, there are companies which can support and help you with that.
Yeah.
So the biggest mistake is to say, I don't do anything. It's just a hype. It will go away. I don't think so. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this, with this said, of course, there are underlying risks you need to consider. I already mentioned the whole regulatory and legal stuff you need to consider, of course. And of course, you need to invest the money wisely, because sometimes AI can cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to infrastructure, this is also something you need to consider in your company.
And let's imagine, so we have a company, it might be an automotive sector, and they kind of, you know, deep dive the strategy, and they said, okay, so those are four questions machine learning and automation can help us with. So how do they move from like asking the questions to prototyping? And what are the best practices in prototyping?
Yeah, so first of all, I would always recommend to, before you implement something, even a prototype, start thinking about how you would attack the problem. So is it necessary to use AI? Maybe it's just an automation script you need. Maybe it's even just a problem in your process. Maybe you need to get rid of some processes which are not necessary. So with that said, when it comes to then the AI part, it's, I think, pretty simple. You need somehow to sketch the data flow. Typically, I start with the data flow. What is the data which is available? What is information available? How is it processed? And what do you want to get out of it, right?
Yeah.
Because when you sketch it, you will see right away if that is a feasible thing or if it's just... Sometimes people think AI can give you something out of nothing.
Yeah,
that's of course not possible. You need the information, whether it's stored in the model, whether it's in the data, but somehow you need to have the information to produce the right output.
And I'm quite curious. So, of course, there is this AI infrastructure with all the GPUs and whatever you take, TPUs. But prior we move there, so the data infrastructure in companies and sometimes I call it vintage infrastructure. So we have sometimes IT, which was brought into a business 30 years ago. So how do you deal with this legacy IT prior to empower data?
Yeah, that's also a very good question companies should ask themselves. So we see, especially in small companies, they can easily shift from one infrastructure to another. So typically we have three different types of infrastructure. We have the, what I would call, it's an on-premise cloud infrastructure, meaning you have server racks, you have your computing capacities within the boundaries of your company, within the firewalls of your company. They are located in some room of your company. And that is, I think, still one of the predominant infrastructure types we are dealing with today. Now, when you shift to heavy computing loads of AI and big storages you need, then you need to consider if it's necessary to build up and scale this infrastructure, so to buy more computer systems, or if you maybe switch to a cloud system. Because the cloud system, this is the next infrastructure type, public cloud systems from providers like an Azure from Microsoft or an AWS, Google Cloud Platform, just to name a few of them. So the big advantage if you use this called hyperscalers, public cloud platforms, is you don't need to know how much capacities you need.
Yeah.
You can just buy them on demand, so to say. And if you see that you don't need the capacities, you can click them away, so to say, and you save a lot of money. But of course, these providers, you have to pay them, and typically it scales with the amount of data, so the price will raise if you have a lot of data. So what companies with legacy infrastructure typically do is they choose some kind of hybrid infrastructure. So that some parts of the data they will handle on-premise, so in their own infrastructure, and some parts, especially compute-intense stuff or AI models, they'll handle in the cloud.
And is it to save costs, or why do those hybrid type of environments are so widespread?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost reason is that you in advance don't need to calculate carefully how much capacities you need.
Yeah.
Right. So if you build an AI service and you need to know how many users you will have and stuff like that to just calculate the right size of the infrastructure. And we know NVIDIA is becoming one of the most valuable company on this planet. And that's because they can provide you with the infrastructure, but it costs a lot of money, and you have to calculate wisely not to invest too much or too less in the infrastructure. And that's why, at least in the first stage, it's very common to use this hyperscalers from the big companies. And then you will see how much infrastructure you need in the end, and then you can again decide whether you use the public sector, the public clouds, or the private on-premise cloud systems.
Yeah. And Christian, to move kind of, you know, from prototype to getting into like a ready-to-go product. So we have the strategy, we have a list of questions, we kind of, you know, figured out how to model, what parameters to use. So we have our design, so many users will utilize this model for I don't know what, and then we have a prototype. So what is the next step to implement an AI solution?
Yeah, so you have a running prototype, and typically it has a narrow scope. So it suits one specific project, because of course you don't want to invest a lot of money in the first place when you don't know how it will apply to a project. Now, when you want to roll it out, you need a stable core, technology core, because it needs to suit for this one project, but for all other projects in a similar way. Maybe, for example, you design it that it can read PDF files, but the next project want to have an Office document. And so you need to make it in the way that you can read different file formats. And that's just one aspect. And of course, the results it produces needs to be as good as in all projects, right? You need somehow to take care that it's not only suited to one project, but all the projects or all the customers which need and use your service. So this stable core is the most crucial part.
Yeah, and Christian, just, you know, give me some sense on how long does it take to move from a prototype to more or less scalable solution. So are we talking weeks, months?
Yeah, I think more months and years, depending on the size of the application. Because besides all the technical stuff, the technology core, you have to build very often a UI, user interface. So we know all ChatGPT, it's really easy to use. It has a great user experience, so to say. But that makes it success. So you have to depend on that. Think, for example, you're writing books, right? So think of an app. You can write books with ChatGPT, of course, and you hand in the first chapters of your book and say to ChatGPT, please give me another chapter of the book.
I never do it because I'm not satisfied with the quality, but what you mean.
But that's exactly the point. Probably you're not satisfied with the output, and you have something in mind, and it will not hit it on the nail. So you have to edit it. So you need to interact with the system somehow. You want to change the third and 13th sentence or something like this. You want to mark it and then say, please, ChatGPT, just iterate these sentence or bring this and that thought into the system. And at that point, it becomes tedious. You need a nice UI to do that.
Yeah.
So it suits your needs.
Yeah.
So this is one aspect. Then, of course, all the IT aspects, IT security is a really important point, of course, when it comes to production-grade application, the whole data handling stuff, of course. Maybe a lot of people are working at the same time on a project. You need somehow to handle all the versions the AI produces, right? AI can really fast produce new versions of stuff, but you have to handle this, of course.
Yeah, managing the zoo.
Yeah, right. And of course, you have to optimize also costs, right? So if you have a prototype, you don't have to care that much about the costs the service produces. But if you scale it to 1 million people, that can run up the costs. So you need to be careful of that. And again, all the regulation stuff you need to take care of and so on. So there's a lot to do.
I am quite curious, you know, so in typical Fortune 500 companies, you must have an approval of the CFO to move some projects, including the AI project. But it's quite difficult to calculate the ROI of an AI project right from the beginning. So can you share some examples or stories where any of your clients managed to be correct from the first week or not?
So, yeah, typically it's very difficult to be correct about that. But of course, there are some guardrails you can apply. So the first thing, of course, you need to be clear what is the benefit from the AI service or in general, any tech service you deploy. In my opinion, can be three different types. Can be, of course, and first and foremost, and that's most often the case, you look on efficiency gains.
Yeah.
But it can also be you increase the quality of your results. And last but not least, maybe you can do something you can't do before because you now can handle the vast amount of complexity or something like this.
Yeah.
So, of course, first and foremost, and that's the easiest thing also to I would say, to handle is the efficiency gain.
And Christian, you reside once again in Germany, and obviously Germany is very active in shaping European legislation, including the European AI Act. And I know that tons of German compliance heads love to talk about AI ethics. So, and you are a practitioner. To be very practical, in your language, what is AI ethics and how to implement ethical AI solutions?
Yeah, I think so. First and foremost, we need to look on the application and what it is for, right? There are applications which are safety critical and where we need to be very careful. For example, autonomous driving is such a field of application. Of course, we need to handle it very carefully. There are other applications which might not be that critical. For example, this example, writing a book with the help of ChatGPT. So we need to distinguish between those things. And of course, there are, and that's also, I think, what the foundation of the AI Act is a risk-based approach. And you need to somehow distinguish between those applications. Now,
yeah, and so this thought about trust and transparency, how do you address those terms very practically when you implement AI?
Yeah, that is a really good thing because I think there's a common misconception. Talking about the non-safety critical application, that's very important because safety critical is another story. But we as humans, we take decisions every day, right? So maybe we want to buy a new car or something like this. And we take these decisions typically without having all information possible. I buy a car because it has a nice color, it has this and that shape, but I don't know this exact car I buy, if it was produced in the best way possible, if there's an error occurring maybe in 2 years or 3 years from now, I don't know about that. Nonetheless, I take a decision. So one thing is we shouldn't expect from an AI more than that. It can only decide on the information available and it will fail from time to time. It's a statistical method behind it. Yeah. But so do we. That's only human, so to say. So we need somehow to allow also AI to do that. Of course, we have to measure practically its accuracy. We develop an algorithm, we need to check what the outcome of the algorithm is, and we need to check it initially when we deploy the service, and we need to monitor this over lifetime, because maybe the data environment will change over time.
And if we now kind of, you know, think about the whole scope of AI implementation, so we had the strategy, so we are prototyped, we executed on first scalable solutions, and then obviously we need to train probably people working with AI in the company and maybe we even need to train customers. Can you share some best practices on how to train and what to do?
Yeah, I think it's super important that you train the people because one thing why some people hesitate to use AI is very often there's a fear I I don't know how it works. I don't know if I can trust the output and so on. So education here is key. And of course, no matter if it's the customers, your own employees, you need to train them. You need to show them what are the capabilities of AI. It's very important to show them what's possible so that they are engaged and doing and dealing with AI. And of course, on the other hand, you need, of course, to tackle what are the problems. Things like hallucinations of large language models might be a problem. Also to talk about legal aspects, because there are some hesitations in using AI here and there. But I think it's not necessary, because you need just to talk about what are the problems, but where are areas where you don't have these problems.
I'm curious, you know, because I've been working with technical people for 3 decades now, and sometimes I wonder. I mean, you require superior communication skills to be great in AI implementation, and sometimes technical people are not necessarily the best talkers. So, how do you kind of, you know, marry this necessity to communicate in and just, let's say, the natural acumen of technologists to stay in their technical bubble and use so many terms and kind of know not to translate what is in their heads to the muggles?
Yeah, I think the most important part is that's what you said. You realize that you need two different types of people. You yeah. need the technology experts, and it's the same at IAB. We have technology experts, but we also have the people who love AI, but they don't know how in detail a large language model is implemented, but they can engage people and transfer to people, because it's very first and foremost a cultural aspect, and you need different type of people there to do that.
And Christian, if someone asks you for an advice and says, look, so I am this mid-sized industrial champion in Germany or in the Netherlands, so I sell, for example, machinery to the global markets, I would love to implement AI solutions. So where do I start? So how would you advise this person?
I would say approach us, of course. Yeah. No, the first thing is you can look you typically have in the company, mid-sized companies, people who deal with change management and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They should take care of the cultural part, of course. They can build, there are a lot of startups out there that you can approach, which can help you with that task. Then you have, of course, the technical side and the technical experts. You need the tools to be implemented. And what I typically would suggest is to start with something easy. Yeah. The easiest step is to bring maybe a ChatGPT or a similar tool to the table of each and every one of your employees, so that they can experience the technology firsthand.
Yeah. And in the world of mobile, so we had this bring your own device movement, which of course came with certain bottlenecks, you know, to assess security and to assess that, let's say, people are really doing the work and not playing with YouTube on their leisure. In terms of AI, sometimes employees are more knowledgeable because they use ChatGPT and similar application at home, but then they enter the workforce, they go to the workplace, and they kind of struggle to translate this personal experience to the employment experience. How do you deal with such situations?
Yeah, I think when we look in the landscape of companies, we see that a lot of companies even didn't manage to bring a ChatGPT into their working environment. So that's something the company's duty is to do that and to bring tools like that on the table. And then, of course, the second step is to give them to give them the time they need to adopt the technology. Because okay. if your calendar is full of meetings, you might have problems to think about where can I use AI in my full meeting calendar, right?
Yeah. And my last question for you, and thank you so much, really, for your insights and being very practical on this podcast. How do you learn? Because, I mean, AI, yes, it's not a new set of technologies, but there are so many new things coming more or less on a daily basis. How do you learn? How do you stay informed?
I think that this is a very individual question for myself. It's like this. So I studied physics because I want to learn how the universe works. So really from that perspective. And so typically my evenings when I want to get to sleep, I look to some podcasts or something like this. It relaxes me, and during this time, I learn very important aspects, and that's my personal approach. But everyone is different. Everyone has to find his or her own approach in getting in touch with all the knowledge out there.
And this is a beauty of us humans, because we can find individual approaches even in the ocean of technology solutions. Christian, thank you so much. And of course, thank you to everyone listening in. That was AI Snacks with Robbie, and Christian today. And the book, Romy, Robbie, and the Secrets of Sleep, is available on Amazon in all the geographies where Amazon ship. And I hope to see you next week, and very, very good day to everyone. Thank you.